Welcome to Ink and Pete, where memoir and Ireland share the stage. We talk with authors, guides, ghostwriters, and other free spirits drawn to memoir or enchanted by Ireland. I'm Barb Robitaille.
And I'm Craig Stewart.
But I also believe that writing memoir is the single greatest portal to self-discovery.
Our guest today is Marion Roach Smith, who, as a young girl, dreamt of having a place of her own in the Dewey Decimal System. Author of four books and counting, Marion has secured more than a spot in the library's card catalog. A celebrated writer whose work has been published across the nation from LA Times to New York Times Magazine, she's been featured in Vogue, Newsday, Good Housekeeping, and a host of other publications. Her podcast, QWERTY, features spirited conversations with writers. Here she draws on her radio experience as commentator on All Things Considered and a regular contributor to Martha Stewart's Living Radio. We're so excited that Marion will be on the April tour as one of our featured authors. Her vast knowledge of and love for memoir will help our writers bring their stories to life.
Each of us has created a top 10 reading list, and we often compare. Mm-hmm. Books that have made a huge impact on our lives, books that we will never part with, books that are, that represent a certain time in our lives. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we agree about what those books might be, and maybe we'll bring those out someday. Mm-hmm. One of those books that has muscled its way into the top 10 list is The Memoir Project.
Yeah, it's on both of our lists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, do you remember the day I brought it home?
I do.
Enlighten our listeners.
I didn't know what had happened, but I was busy doing something. Craig came in. He said, "Sit down. I have something to tell you." And I thought, oh my gosh, I don't know what's coming. And so I did, and he said, "You have to read this book." And he shows me The Memoir Project by Marion Roach Smith. And he said, "This is amazing." And so we spent the rest of that day reading Marion's book. And we didn't get a thing done that day except to read. And it was the best time.
We read it aloud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It was great read aloud.
It was. It was. Yeah. I think we ordered takeout at dinner and we just kept going.
It was so good. Anyone who's at all interested in writing memoir needs to have this book in his or her library. Mm-hmm. It's written so beautifully, and she draws you in through her own memoir, little memoirs peppered throughout the book, mm-hmm. in a way that you sort of are tricked into, you know, into reading these little stories that are lovely. And then at the end, she goes, "Do you see what I did there?" And you're like, yeah.
Yeah. She's brilliant at bringing the ordinary moments alive in a way that we can all relate to.
Yeah. Which is really the point of memoir, isn't
exactly.
it?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. 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 I'm looking at our copy here. Wish you all could see this. It's just shy of the rubber band stage. It's still holding together, but it's been well-loved, I guess.
It's a well-loved, dog-eared, coffee-stained, tattered.
I think there's a little wine on there. That's when I thought I wrote that great sentence.
A few tears. Yeah. Exactly.
That it wasn't the next day. It wasn't so great.
Yeah.
Maybe Marion will take pity on us and give us a new copy of the book.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Right. We can always hope.
We can always hope.
Yeah.
You know, I tell people that there's just something about Ireland. When it boils down to what I want to say about Ireland, it always comes to that sentence. There's just something about Ireland. And I feel the same way about Marion Roach Smith. There's just something about Marion.
Yeah, well put. Yep.
And I can't wait to experience Ireland and Marion at the same time.
Oh, man.
I can't wait.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Whew. Mm. That's going to be something. Well, for the time being, we can listen to what
she has
to say.
We don't have to wait any longer.
No.
So it's time to put the kettle on and have a listen to Marion Roach Smith.
Hello, Marion. Great to be chatting with you today.
Wonderful to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Oh, you're so welcome. There are so many things I'd like to talk with you about, but today I'd like to focus on your little brilliant book and life-changing for me, The Memoir Project. So many of our people are interested in memoir, and you've created this book that is, for me, it was life-changing to read it. And I'd like to ask you some questions. You've named it The Memoir Project, a thoroughly non-standardized text for writing and life. Now, how did you come up with that?
Well, I did come up with the title myself. And for me, the texts are usually fairly standardized. There are writing prompts, for instance, in almost every other writing book. And I abhor writing prompts. So that pretty much qualifies me as non-standardized. But I also believe that writing memoir is the single greatest portal to self-discovery. And everybody I know who does it gets some life lessons out of it. So if you want, as you know perfectly well, to figure something out, you've got to sit down and think about it. It's not going to come, you know, no one's going to deliver the answer to you, no matter how spiritual you are. You're going to have to do some work. One of the great ways to do this is to write about your life and to really ask yourself what just happened here in that transaction between me and my dog, or me and that tree, or me and that person that I just lost. And so that's why the title is what it is. But it did take a while. So you had 6 months to come up with it. And I was thrilled when I finally did.
Well, what I like about it is exactly what you're saying. And I want to go deeper into this is the life part of it. I mean, there are so many books about writing, but I have yet to see one that actually combines what you just talked about. And that's really appealing to me. You mentioned in the book that writing memoir is about being honest. Mm-hmm. How do you have tips for someone to look at something that's happened to them or that they remember, which we'll talk about in a bit, in an honest way?
Mm-hmm. So I always ask people to ask themselves what just happened here. As I said earlier, what just happened? What was that transaction? I just was next door with my neighbor, let's say, and I know something changed me in the conversation we had. Something got to me. Something moved me. Maybe I was mad at her about something and, you know, I just thought she's selfish and her dog is too loud. And I went over there to tell her. And then she told me something about what's going on in her life. And it changed me. And so those are the moments of great transaction. And I always suggest to people that if you ask yourself what just happened here, when you have a moment of something that you feel, and particularly feel somewhat deeply, instead of getting in your car and turning on the radio and forgetting all about it, what if you had, like I do, a little notebook literally tied to your gear shift and you made a few notes? And that's how you be honest, is you ask, what is this about? It's a wonderful question. And I never mean the plot when I ask that question. I mean, what's it about in the cosmic universal? Is it about mercy? Right there, if I forgave my neighbor for something, we've had a transaction that had some mercy and some human understanding. That's much more interesting than anything that could be playing on the radio that I was about to listen to. So that's how I get into the honesty part, is I ask myself, what just happened here and what is this about?
Nice. You mentioned that feeling something real is where you prefer to live. Mm-hmm. So have you come by that through writing or through just that's your nature, or you've been in situations where maybe feeling something false got in your way, or how did that come to you?
That's such a lovely and kind question and such a great invitation for me to think about it. First of all, I'm a redhead, so I'm extremely reactive and people expect certain responses from me. And I don't always give them, but I'm prone to immediacy. And I think I learned over time that with those immediate responses that I just get what I want as opposed to perhaps what's really going on. I think I learned some lessons early on that with a little bit of patience and a little bit of wonder, you actually find enormous connection between people. So I don't think it was born and bred into me. I think it's something you learn. And I think it's something you can practice. And I think it's something that also as a writer is essential, because I learned at the New York Times to never ask a question with intent. Never ask a question, you know, oh, I know he's guilty. I'm going to go get that confession out of him. No, go and ask. You'll be amazed what people will tell you when you ask them questions. I have literally never had someone say no to me when I've called them up to ask them, whether it was for the Times or for a magazine piece or for any of the books I've written. I have never had anyone say no when I ask them, may I come and have you explain to me what you do for a living? And in that, I've gotten to go to autopsies. I've gotten to go to Oxford and have a population geneticist explain to me the age of a human gene. I've gone all over the world looking at things. But it's with that curiosity and wonder that I don't think I had. I think I was very responsive initially as a kid. And I learned that you don't learn anything. It's like being a know-it-all. You don't learn anything. So I think that's what it is. I think it's the wonder. And honestly, this world is fascinating and people do remarkable things for a living. Your garbage man has stories to tell, by the way. Imagine the things he's seen. I was talking to a contractor yesterday. He was telling some tales about things he's walked in on. It was great.
Nice. So that goes along with the notion that everyone has a story.
I genuinely believe that. I honestly know that everyone has stories to tell. They've been told they're not valuable. They've been told that writing has no financial reward. They've been told not to speak about themselves. A whole generation, mostly of men, but of men and women, came home from Vietnam and were told to not wear their uniforms on the plane and to be expect to be spit on. And they did not talk. And I have now students who are 70 to 75 years old who are Vietnam vets who are, for the first time in their lives, talking about it. They were 19. What did they know? And then they were told to never tell. Wow. Wow. Right?
Yeah, what a huge burden to carry.
What a huge burden to carry. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to read you a quote from your book that it struck me as something that I would like to know about just for myself. The single biggest reason for not being prepared to write what you know is not knowing how to dig among your stuff to get what you need. Okay. Help me out, Marian. I'm ready to dig. Let's go.
So you go into that wild, as I call it, the Walmart-sized subconscious of yours, and you just want one detail. You just went and bought your daughter her first pair of school shoes, right? And something happened between you and the salesperson. You thought you were cool. You know, you're on a punch list. You've got a million things to do. You're busy. You go to the store. You just want to get this thing over with. And suddenly, as that salesperson is holding your child's little foot in his hand, you start crying. And you put your sunglasses on because you're too cool to show anybody. And the salesperson just reaches over and taps you on the back of the hand, right? And you've had something happen. And there's a transaction there. Okay, so you go home to try to write that story. And every pair of shoes you have ever owned invades your head, right? You just want to write this one little story, but suddenly you're writing about the history of your own shoe buying because you don't know how to wade through the tales to just get that one detail that you need. And so I try to teach people first to accept that your subconscious is like Walmart and it's completely distracting all the time. But if when you ask yourself, what is this story about? That you can dive into Walmart and ignore all the lawn chairs and all the icicle lights left over from Christmas and everything else, and just get that one detail you need, which is what happened here? What's this about? So we're just not prepared. There's no reason in the world we should be. I mean, really good editors taught me to think this way. And that's the beauty of what I get to do, is it's not my energy to keep. I'm just supposed to put it out in the world, and that's what I'm supposed to do. So that's what I do. And it's so much fun to watch other people respond, because that Walmart subconscious thing gets us every time. I mean, who needs all those shoes in that story, right? Hmm.
You know, speaking of putting it all out there, one of the things that keeps me coming back to your book, which I keep on my desk, by the way.
Oh,
no, I do. That's right there.
The luckiest thing anyone's ever said to me. That's so nice.
No, it's true. It's dog-eared and coffee stained. And I love referring to it. Similarly, the way you talk about the war of art. And
oh, it's a great book.
That's
Stephen Pressfield is a genius. And that book makes me cry.
Absolutely. And your book makes me cry in a couple of places, which we'll save for the reader to find. But how does it feel to you? You do put it out there. You are an open book. You talk about really difficult things, but you talk about them with an honesty and with a clarity, a model for how I would like to write and behave in my life. And like in the title, you know, this is about life here. How does it feel to throw it all out there, whether it's red hair or your mother with Alzheimer's or your relationship with your sister?
Yeah, I don't throw it all out there. I'm actually really private, which is really interesting. This isn't at all. I have a marriage. I've written a lot about my marriage, but not the story of my marriage. I've written about my child, but I stopped writing about her when she was about 13. And I believe that you choose your topics really well. And it's not about telling it all. It's about telling some of it well. And it's a discernment. You know, the Buddhists teach us that discernment is one of the most important things we can learn. And I'm not Buddhist. I'm absolutely a retail spiritualist. I've torn through every religion there is. I've got the prayer beads. I've got the whatever. And I speak Yiddish. And, you know, but what I picked up along the way from Buddhism is this concept of discernment, putting some space between me and my responses. And so in that, you make the decisions what not to write about. And I don't write about things I don't understand. I might write about not understanding them. I mean, a marriage is one of the great confounding relationships in the world, but it's also a place from which I take much of my self-esteem, having a 31-year marriage. Would I ever think I could write about marriage? No. But I've taken small moments of my own to illuminate the larger things. And in that, I don't think it's exposure as much as it's illumination. And I think there's a huge difference. I don't just tell you what we did and said. I try to take a tiny little moment and I try to show you something big that you can join in on.
You talk about, I love the notion you say about a sandlot sense of the divine in your book. You talk about that. I love that line because I feel like I'm right on the same team there.
There are those sandlot sense of the divine team that we should all play on.
I think so.
We should get a t-shirt, right?
I agree. I totally agree. And so, you talk a lot about transcendence in your book and about living a spiritual life in a sandlot way. Mm-hmm. Do you think that is a component of memoir or is that?
I think I wouldn't like to claim anybody else's abilities to live in this sandlot life of spirituality, but it's helpful to me. I just got off the text with a friend of mine who's missing her mother in the advent of Valentine's Day. And she's beating herself up. You know, why haven't I gotten over this? It hasn't been quite a year. And, you know, I said to her, why do they have to go? Why can't you just keep her, right? Why can't she just be there with you? And I'm just not having a problem with that. So I think it's just the experiment of saying what if that characterizes me. But I don't think it's necessary. I know lots of confirmed, absolute. My best friend is a science writer and he is as much an atheist as you're ever going to meet. And he writes beautifully because he believes in the pursuit of pure knowledge. So he'll go anywhere. And with his curiosity, absolutely anywhere. So no, I don't think you have to be a sandlot spiritualist, but I think for me, it's what's gotten me here. I really do. I believe anything's possible. It's like, well, sure. Tell me about it. I'll listen.
Excellent. You write that a great stumbling block for writers is wanting to be admired.
Yeah.
Now you are admired and you have a very long and illustrious career. How does that play into someone who's just writing a memoir for the first time?
It's such a good issue because you can always tell when a writer wants to be admired. You can find those sentences. They're like shiny fish in the stream. You know, it's like, no, shoot that fish right now. You can tell when someone has written paragraphs just to get to that one line that they loved. You can tell when an essay doesn't work because they've planted a line in the beginning that they never defend through the piece. They never prove through the piece. So that's what I mean. Being admired for your work is if you've earned it, that's fine. I mean, where we go, jazz hands, isn't this a great sentence? Don't you love it? Am I really, really clever? And you know this, and the rest of the piece just is bland. Mm-hmm. So we literally get into trouble in our pieces when we write those, I call them those big grand piano sentences. And instead of writing them, what I always say to my writers that I work with is maybe that's what the piece is about. Pull that sentence out, make it the absolute argument of the piece, and never use it in the piece, but prove it in your scenes, and you'll find yourself writing and not trying to be admired. So that's the difference. There are writers that I admire enormously. William Kennedy is my favorite living writer in the world, and I adore everything he writes, and Russell Banks, and I go to Emily Dickinson's house once a year just to worship at the ground that she walked, and the list goes on and on, Edith Wharton. But I don't think that you should want to be admired for a single sentence. I think that's dangerous territory.
Yeah. You write about the numbers of people you've helped. You've kind of been a midwife in memoir. You've got
I've got the stretch marks to prove it.
you've helped at least 1,000 and more people work through their memoirs.
Oh, yes.
Could you tell the story of how you came to see memoir as your sort of focus in writing or your calling?
These days, I mean, I literally think at this point, we're reaching thousands of people a year at the Memoir Project, about 100 people a month go through the classes. And I've been at this for about 22 years. So there's been just so many stories that I've gotten to hear. But I remember the exact moment when I realized I was writing memoir. I wrote a piece for the New York Times Magazine when I was 26 years old that changed the course of my life because my mother was an Alzheimer's patient. She was very young. And the editor at the New York Times Magazine talked me into writing this piece, which was an extraordinary chance they took on me. I'd never written a magazine piece in my life. I was a kid. I was a clerk on the Metropolitan desk. You know, I had no business writing for the best, most powerful magazine in the world. But a friend of mine read the piece and said to me, "Nice piece of memoir." And I remember just standing there sort of slack-jawed and blinking at him and thinking, I thought it was journalism. I don't understand. Old people write memoir. I don't get it. And I went and I looked up the definition of memoir. And for a few years, I was kind of troubled by that because it didn't seem I had the right to have any perspective yet. And so it forced me to really think about memoir. And I'm the only person I know that teaches memoir the way I do, that the way that I define it as coming from one area of your expertise, as having to have an argument there, and this whole idea of writing with intent that I talk about. But that was when it began, and I really sort of dropped on my head. Memoir, me? No, like that's what is that? And then I started thinking about it. And I actually think it's a beautiful genre. I spent a lot of time defending it though. You know, the last time I was on a public radio show, when they introduced me, the host used the word memoir as an expletive, basically. He's like, "Oh, and she's written a book on memoir." And I thought, get over yourself. This is a wonderful genre. Anne Frank is memoir. And the slave narratives are memoir. And if it weren't for memoir, we wouldn't know about the disenfranchised people that we know about. So I think it's a beautiful genre. I think it gets a bad reputation in some hands, but for every time it gets a bad reputation, someone comes along with a book that takes our collective breath away.
I agree with you. I'm forgetting the exact quote now, but I think it was H.G. Wells who said that memoir was going to eventually replace fiction as the go-to genre, just because our lives are so more, I guess, complex. And I'll have to look that up and send it to you.
I'd be interested to know. I think it's big. I think the history of it, you know, it goes back to St. Augustine. You can take it all the way back there. You can take it further, of course, but he's a pretty good place to start. It works for me. He had a pretty complicated youth and then grew up to be somebody very different and then wrote about it. And wow.
Yeah. What's wrong with that? Yeah, exactly. One of the things I love about your website is you've got this list of memoirs that you strongly recommend reading. And I've been working my way through them, and I've so many of them. Yeah. Which reminds me right now to give a little shout out to your website and your classes. Could you just give us a little sort of thumbnail sketch?
Sure. So yeah. I started marianroach.com some number of years ago, and it was just meant to be a place where you could go and get some reference on how to write memoir. And about 5 years ago, perhaps, I started teaching one class online, how to write the personal essay. And now I think I have 6 classes. They're all, most of them are live. There's one recorded class that I now sell, which is a a masterclass, series of lectures that I do in a masterclass where people write first drafts of their books. But there's everything there from the very beginning class called Memoirama to Memoirama 2, where you learn to structure a book. There's a course on how to write op-eds and personal essays that I'm a huge believer in testing your material on the public. Two of my four books came out of shorter pieces that I wrote. One came out of a blog post. The Memoir Project started as a blog post and morphed into that crazy little book. And then the first book, of course, came out of the New York Times Magazine piece, as I said. So I teach across the spectrum, and I'm about to add a personal essay class because that's how I started. And I sort of left that behind for a while. It's my favorite form of the genre. And I think I just had such tender feelings about it. I didn't want to teach it anymore for a while, but I'm ready to go back into it. So there's lots of classes. There's hundreds of thousands of words of information on everything from how to figure out what your story is about to how to plot your book. And I hope that people will go and partake because I write it for people. And most of them I never meet or talk to.
Right. I imagine that's the case with that number of people. It's a beautiful website. And I love going there and just sort of scrolling through things and getting inspired and seeing what I should read next. So yeah, now we're rapidly coming to a close. Two questions. Mm-hmm. First of all, what are you reading right now? What's on your nightstand?
So I just bought myself a box edition of the complete J.D. Salinger because I went to read The Nine Stories again the other day after, of all people, William Kennedy, who again is my greatest favorite living writer. He's 92 years old, and I saw him the other day at his birthday, and I asked him what he was reading, and he said, "I'm reading Seymour Glass," and I knew exactly the reference. I said, "Good, perfect day for Banana Fish, and Raise High the Roof Beam Carpenters." Is that Seymour Glass? And he said, "Yes, he's such an interesting character," and I thought, I'll bite. And I went and got my copy of My Nine Stories, and it fell apart in my hands because it was my high school copy. So now there's this great hardback complete Salinger boxed edition, and I'm reading my way through that. And honestly, Seymour Glass is one of the most remarkable characters ever created in fiction. I have to agree with the great Mr. Kennedy.
All right. Duly noted. I have to jump on that one. Another question we love to ask our people is, where have you found joy where you least expected it?
Oh, in repotting a plant yesterday, I found total joy. And it, you know why? That's so funny. That just came out of me as soon as you asked it. I remember because it's February and there's no dirt to be found where I live. We're under ice and snow. And this plant really needed to be repotted. And suddenly I had the potting soil and the pots and the mess and that smell of the earth. And I was so happy. So there.
that's lovely. I love that image. I love that smell too. That is just, we're pretty much ready for that. We just had rain for days and 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 days. I think it's the wettest winter on record, possibly.
We didn't have a lot of snow where I am in upstate New York. And that's tragic because I love to snowshoe. We have foxes this year where I live, like I've never heard before. They were out yipping under my bedroom window the other night, literally. It's apparently mating season. So in the moonlight, out in the ice, we've just had an incredible ice storm for the last 3 days. Out in the ice, these foxes are running around and letting me watch them. And that's kind of, I guess that would be my second after the repotting the plant, is the fox family that's come to yip under my bedroom window. I love the fact that they're telling me it's mating season. I'm not available, but how nice to be invited.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, Marion, it's been great talking with you today.
Lovely.
So looking forward to Ireland, spending time with you in Ireland.
Me too.
There are a couple of places open at this moment. So if someone hears this in the next week or two, hop on it. If you want to be with Marion Roach Smith. Yeah, it's lovely. Thank you for everything. We'll be chatting soon.
Great. Thanks.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Ink and Pete, a production of Memoir Tours Ireland.
For more information on Memoir Tours, visit memoirtours.com.
Until next time, may you find joy where you least expect it.